Dateline Washington, Thursday, April 23rd, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, the real Democratic energy plan. Arizona Congressman John Shadegg is a member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. He's seen the actual legislation that Chairman Henry Waxman and President Obama want to pursue. We'll discuss its contents and explain what it means for your bottom line. Also in this edition, does the Treasury even care where the TARP money is going? Texas Congressman Kevin Brady, a member of the Joint Economic Committee of Congress, is with us to explain why he and his colleagues want oversight, but Treasury is reluctant to provide it. Plus, America's ocean of debt. Former U.S. Comptroller General David Walker is with us to explain the urgent need for America to get its fiscal house in order. And the week in politics, from the CIA memos to the handshake with Chavez, we'll discuss it all with John Gizzi of Human Events. All that, plus Thursday's headlines are straight ahead on Dateline Washington. We begin with Congressman Shadegg and energy policy, and we begin right now. My first guest in this edition is Arizona Congressman John Shadegg, a Republican representing the Grand Canyon State's 3rd Congressional District, and he's also a member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. That is central to our conversation today as the Congressman gives us some inside information about what is really contained inside the House version of a cap-and-trade legislation, which is designed to change U.S. energy policy, but could also mean a lot lighter wallets for the American consumers. And Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Greg. Happy to be with you.
We reported earlier in the week, right about the same time that we were talking about the Environmental Protection Agency deciding to regulate carbon dioxide, that the chairman of your committee, Henry Waxman, said he was committed to an initial 20% reduction in greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide emissions from U.S. industries and so forth. Take us inside that. What are the details? What would be the impact?
There are lots and lots of details. It's a 600-plus page bill, but it really can be summarized fairly quickly and straightforwardly. The bill imposes a price for the emission of carbon dioxide, and it does that through what is referred to as a cap-and-trade mechanism. What that means is that the government will say to all industries that currently emit carbon dioxide, the easy one that comes to mind, or easy ones that come to mind, are energy producers that produce electricity by using natural gas or coal or oil. And they would say to them, well, your historical use has been X. We're going to cap your emissions at that amount, and we're going to charge you to buy credits in order to continue to emit that amount of carbon dioxide. Obviously, if they charge money to such a utility for the right or the ability to continue to emit the amount of carbon dioxide it has admitted in the past or emitted in the past, then that's going to be an additional cost imposed on that utility. That cost will get passed on to consumers. The current utilities cannot absorb those costs, and what they'll do is they'll raise the price of electricity. Now, it's actually much broader than that because it applies to much more than just electricity. It applies to every industry that produces carbon dioxide. There will be some exemptions in the bill, but for example, if you have a steel plant or a cement plant, you name it. Indeed, if you presumably do anything that emits carbon dioxide, you're going to be you will be told what your cap is, and you will be required to purchase credits, so-called credits, to continue to emit carbon dioxide going into the future, and costs for all of that will go up.
We have had various policy experts talking about this plan that's going to be brought before Congress, and we've heard anything from $3,000 to yesterday, an estimate as high as $10,000 a year for the average American family when you factor in not only electricity costs, but just how every product that they buy has a higher price tag because it's going to cost more for producers to get that product to market. What's your estimate? What have you heard from your folks?
Well, I think it's hard to put a number on it, but a couple of quick points. Number one, I asked a panel of witnesses today if they all agreed that passage of this legislation would add to the cost of energy for every American. They all essentially agreed. And then I asked, well, will it add to the cost of everything we buy, which is produced consuming energy? That is, if you buy an automobile, if energy was required to be consumed in the production of that automobile, will the price of the automobile go up? The answer was yes. And that extends all the way down to, my example is a ham sandwich. You got to bake the bread and you got to bake the ham before you can serve a ham sandwich, so the cost of that will go up. The minimum estimates that I have heard, and the controversial one, is an estimate that was derived from a report by MIT. That estimate originally was used by opponents of this legislation to say that the cost for the average family would be $3,100, interestingly, per year. Interestingly, the author of that report said, no, that's not true. But in further conversation, he's pretty well confirmed that it's not only true, it's a lowball number, that the number, at least according to one analysis that's surfaced recently, is that it's a minimum of $3,900 per family per year. He pretty much acknowledged that the only reason he had said it would not impose that cost is because the government's going to collect this money, much like it collects a tax, and then the government says it's going to redistribute it. So his original position was, well, since the government's going to redistribute this money, it really won't cost anybody anything. A pretty silly position.
Congressman, the Democrats promised at any level that the consumers would be getting enough money back to cover their additional energy costs as a result of this program?
There are no promises that it will be returned to the taxpayer. Some portion of the funds the president proposes to return in his Make Work Pay initiative, which would give, a rebate to individual taxpayers of $400 for an individual, $800 for a family. That, however, is very limited to the extremely low income. The rest of the money the president is proposing be used for general government items, including what he wants to do to reform health care. So the answer is that money will not come back to the consumer in the form of money they can use. At best, it will be spent by government to pay for services and redistributed to whoever gets those services and taken away totally from those who pay that money but don't get the services.
Congressman, you mentioned how this could affect the price of just about everything we consume or purchase in this country, but that's not the end of the story. In addition to the 20% reductions that Congressman Waxman has in this legislation, from what we understand, it's progressive, so that in 20 years, we're looking as high as 80% reductions. What can you confirm on that and the impact it would have?
Well, there's no question but that the bill gets worse, if you will, over time, and that the burden on the economy gets worse over time. There is pretty much no question, I think, by a rational analysis, that it will cost Americans jobs and that the impact will grow over time. You simply cannot decide that something is a pollutant, start charging people for emitting that pollutant, impose that cost on the cost of all goods, and not have it drag down the economy. In Europe, I think you ought to look at cost-benefit. In Europe, there has been a similar program enacted, and there has been almost no reduction in greenhouse gases. The numbers show 0.08% reduction in greenhouse gases, but a huge economic burden on the European economy. I think you've touched on some of the things that are secondary concerns. There is the issue of, well, if we impose these kind of additional costs on American businesses and American families, will some of those businesses decide to flee America and take their activities elsewhere? And there's pretty good evidence that, in fact, that will occur, making job losses even worse.
A couple minutes left here with Arizona Congressman John Shadegg. And Congressman, we hear that the administration and some Democrats even admit that some jobs would be lost as a result of this plan, but they say there's green jobs coming in that will make up for that and lead this country in a new direction. How do you respond to that?
Well, two responses. Number one, there has been a study done in Spain which was subjected to the similar kind of regime, and the numbers in that study show that for every green job created, 2.2 non-green jobs were lost. I would also cite a couple of other examples, one out of Europe, where just as a hypothetical or just as an example, there was a cement plant, a very advanced high-tech cement plant in France. When a regime like this was imposed there, it was shut down, and the plant was moved to Morocco. The plant now located in Morocco is producing the cement. The cement is being shipped back into Europe for use there. The overall carbon dioxide emissions have gone up. There's a steel facility proposing to build a plant in Louisiana that I heard about yesterday from a Louisiana congressman. They've come forward and said they want to build this steel plant in Louisiana. It would produce 700 permanent jobs. However, They have announced that if cap and trade is imposed here in the United States, it will be uneconomic to build it here, and they will build it in Brazil. So the notion that green jobs will make up for the losses of jobs in the American economy, I think, is fanciful. I think it's pretty clear that this is a net job loss because it's a net burden on the economy. There are other things we could be doing, and there are steps we could be taking that would reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but not create such job losses. We can make buildings more efficient. We can make homes and offices more efficient in terms of their use of energy for heating and cooling, and in that achieve two ends, both bring down greenhouse gas emissions and also bring down our consumption of energy all told, including our consumption of foreign oil. Unfortunately, that's not what this plan does. This plan goes dramatically further with a lot of additional costs.
Any counter legislation coming from the Republicans on energy policy or specifically related to the Waxman bill?
Yes, Mr. Barton will be offering an alternative. That alternative is being debated or has been debated and discussed in general terms during the hearings that are going on this week. The alternative I favor is the one I just mentioned, which is until we know for sure that it is human-made or man-made greenhouse gases that are causing global warming, we should go after strategies that achieve two goals, both reducing greenhouse gases and reducing our consumption of energy, period, for example, by producing more efficient automobiles and more efficient buildings and homes, or insulating the buildings and homes we have now, gaining two benefits rather than going to a cap-and-trade system or a carbon capture and sequestration system, which have only a single benefit. They don't reduce our consumption of energy. They just reduce our emission of greenhouse gases.
Congressman, unfortunately, our time is up. Great of you to spend time with us today, sir. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Arizona Congressman John Shattuck represents his state's 3rd Congressional District, member of the Critical Energy and Commerce Committee in the House of Representatives. This is Dateline Washington.